The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright. The power to create a happier, healthier life drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected. A place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules in beautiful La Quinta, California, and I'm getting ready for the holiday season, and I'm so excited. By the way, Merry Christmas, everyone. Knowing me the way you do, if you guess I have a Christmas message for you, well, you would be right. To be sure, it has a lot to do with the Law of Attraction, and it's a message that I really want you to hear while you're still on this planet. Tonight we have on incredible, amazing stories by 26 physicians talking about the miracles that happened to themselves and to their patients. Scott J. Kobaba, MD, talks about his book that features stories from 26 other physicians in his book called Physicians Untold Stories. Now, these doctors experienced some amazing miracles through their patients, such as near-death experiences, or intuitively picking up true health issues that prevented death, and even patients who revealed stories that they were told while deep in comas. This is a really tremendous show, so I want all who are listening, and of course you know there are many around the world in many remote places like Ilili, Nigeria, that there are some important things that I want you to know and never to forget. So I made a list of 10 things that I thought are important. Before we get into these amazing stories of 26 physicians, I want to tell you about you. First of all, you are a miracle. You outswam millions of others to connect to the life force of your mother. You did that. This is why you can safely say to yourself that you are one in a million, or possibly even a trillion. Even if you are a twin, you have your own attributes, your own way of thinking, and believe me, you are absolutely brilliant. Number two, there is a reason and purpose for you to be here, and that purpose is to be fulfilled in this lifetime. It's much easier if you learn to dissolve your anger and sadness at an early age, but even if you don't, just rest assured, by the end of your life, you will have resolved many of the issues that you came here to resolve. You were busier than you thought, especially in the thought department. Number three, you didn't fail at anything, because each attempt that you tried, you succeeded in learning more about your abilities, and more importantly, moving beyond your limitations. Remember, there is no such thing as failing. There is only learning, which you will always have the benefit from the knowledge you gain. Number four, one of the most extraordinary things that happened to you is that you fell in love with another human or even an animal. There were many more times in your life that you felt loved and admired than not. And every time you loved and felt loved, you nurtured not only you and the loved one, but the planet as well. That's because your personal vibrational power of love was so powerful that it can and it did heal things around you without you even noticing. Number five, you fell in love with an idea that stayed with you all your life. This idea grew and grew, and as you aged, you still remembered all of those ideas. Some were good and some were not so good, but they were all from your essence. It made you who you are today, and for that, I'm so grateful. 6. During your last days on the planet, your mind will wander off just to remember things. Please remind yourself to find the joy in these memories and discard the memories that create misery, because those don't do you any good, and they don't do the world any good either. 7. So many days in your life, you were so hard on yourself, so demanding, so unforgiving, because quite simply, you just forgot how you are and how much you gave of yourself to your job, your family, to your love, to the world. It's hard to think of gratitude when you overthink your unhappiness. 8. Sometimes you literally had to pull yourself up by your shoestrings, and sometimes you forgot that you had this amazing ability to see the good in everything, especially yourself. 9. Never forget that the world was watching, and they were all very impressed by your strength and tenacity to get through a very difficult time. 10. Even more important, never forget that you were loved by this invisible source of energy. This energy came from the ethers, and perhaps it was those family members that had already passed on, or perhaps it was energy sent to you by others to help you through a trying time. But you need to know that every step you took, you were admired, loved, and so appreciated for what you contributed to not only your part of the world, but to all of mankind. Your divine essence helped all of humanity to move forward. Yes, all the good, the bad, and the ugly, but especially the beauty that was in you, all formed this perfect world in which we came here to experience and learn. Now let me make this perfectly clear. You are important, and you are a gift from God. Please never forget that you are an incredible blessing to God and to us. The best is yet to come. Have a wonderful Merry Christmas. Now, I want you to get ready to be uplifted and gain the hope you need during this Christmas season. Again, tonight's show is brought to you via the Universal Law of Attraction. The Law of Attraction thinks it's time that you need to hear this. So, I want you to pay attention, because tonight is all about hope, love, and jubilation. And you can go to www.physiciansuntoldstories.com to get your copy of this most uplifting book ever. Now let's listen to these short commercials, and then we're going to be right back with Dr. Scott Kobaba after these words.
It's here, it's hot, and it's a must read. It's the science behind The Law of Attraction magazine. Every issue brings you great articles and in-depth how-tos from all your favorite Law of Attraction experts, authors, scientists, and medical professionals. Go to lawofattractionmagazine.net. That's lawofattractionmagazine.net.
Welcome back to Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. I am so happy to bring you this show tonight. Scott J. Koboba, MD, is a practicing physician in Wheaton, Illinois, who completed his residency at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. He's a proud father of seven with five grandchildren, and I'm delighted that he could join me during his very busy schedule. What he has to share will bring you 100 times more comfort than any medication that you have ever taken. Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio, Dr. Koboba. I so look forward to talking with you.
Thanks, Jules. It's great to be here, and I look forward to talking with you, too.
Well, this is a wonderful and uplifting book that you wrote, and it's perfect timing for the upcoming holidays. It's exactly what we need right now to show us that there's something beyond our 3D world, and I'm so glad that you, as a medical doctor, have taken the time to write this out and show us some really good stories. So tell us, are these undocumented scientific things or miracles that happen, are they seen more and more by the medical profession today?
You know, I think it's hard to say because, you know, doctors don't like to talk about these things because, you know, they're a little embarrassed. These are ordinary doctors that I talk with. And, you know, if you went to a doctor and he said, I saw a vision that you were going to need XYZ surgery in the future, you'd think the doctor was a little bit strange. So doctors don't like to talk about this. And when we got the docs together, they were all surprised about what each of them had experienced. So I think doctors probably experience a little bit more divine help than other people because they're involved with caring and helping people. And I think, you know, there's someone upstairs, there's a force, there's a God, whatever you want to call it, that looks after us. And I think he or she helps doctors a little bit more because they're caring for other individuals too.
Yeah, I see. So what was your first occurrence that made you think that you had something that maybe the whole world should know about?
Well, you know, I've had a couple strange experiences. One of the first was probably a call from one of my patients in Louisiana. He was traveling. He travels quite a bit. And he called me from Louisiana. He said, Dr. Koboba, I've got this abdominal pain that started after I ate. And it sounded typical for gallbladder. And I said, okay, Taylor, I'd like you to go to the closest emergency room. We'll have them check you out. We'll see if, get your gallbladder ultrasound, get your blood test, and we'll see if we need to have you admitted or whatever. So he went to the local emergency room, and he called me from the emergency room, and he said, everything was done, gallbladder ultrasound, x-rays, labs, everything was perfectly normal, and I'm feeling better, so they sent me out. And I said, okay, Taylor, finish your business and come home. When you come home, I'll take a look at you in the office. So he came home. I looked at him in the office. Sounded like classic gallbladder, right upper quadrant abdominal pain, nausea, and just not feeling very well. So I got some fancier gallbladder studies, some additional lab work. Everything was perfectly normal. It was really troubling because it's not, you don't like to have a person with a pain and an undiagnosed condition. So about 2 or 3 days later, I woke up in the morning with this strange feeling. I had a feeling that he needed a lung scan. Now, that didn't make any sense. This was abdominal pain. Why would he need a lung scan? But I just couldn't get the feeling out of my head. So I called him up, which is unusual. I called him up about 7 o'clock in the morning. I said, Taylor, I didn't tell him I had this dream or a premonition. I just said, I think you need a lung scan. And he said, well, I can't get it today because I'm flying out to Denver this afternoon. I'm going to be busy and so forth. So I said, I really have a strong feeling you need a lung scan. If I can get it in this morning, would that be okay? Could you still make the flight? And he said, yeah, I could. And I said, well, would you mind if I did that? And there was a long pause at the end of the line. And he finally said, okay. So I called the hospital, and I talked to the radiology people, and I said, can I get a lung scan in this morning? And after they stopped laughing, they said, our lung scans are scheduled out, 3 days. And I also used the technique of a long pause on the end of the line. And he finally said to me, okay, send him right over. So I called Taylor. I said, Taylor, go over and get a lung scan, you know, as soon as you can. That way you can get out to Denver by this afternoon. So about an hour and a half later, I get a call from the radiologist, and he says, nice call. I said, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, he had a massive pulmonary embolus sitting on his diaphragm. That's why he had abdominal pain and not chest pain. I said, oh, my goodness. And the radiologist said, you know, had he flown out today like he wanted to, he'd probably died. Because he'd had other blood clots, very likely. So I put him right in the hospital, put him in the Septon intensive care unit, and we learned that he had a hereditary clotting disorder, so that he's on anticoagulant for life. And that little word or thought in the back of my mind literally saved his life. And I thought, this is really strange. I wonder if other doctors have similar experiences.
Wow.
So that was the beginning. That's what really got my attention, and that's what got me on the road.
Wow. And so you started thinking that people need to know that there's more than meets the eye, huh?
Exactly. You know, there were a couple other experiences too. After that, doctors started coming to me and I don't know why. But the first occurrence was my friend Dave Mokel, who's an orthopedic surgeon. I was on the floor making rounds, and he literally ran up to me and grabbed me by the arm and said, I've got this amazing story to tell you. And I said, okay, tell it to me. He said, well, I can't tell it here. Someone might hear it. I said, well, who have you told this story to? And he said, well, no one, just my family. So he said, come into this empty patient room. Let me tell you this story. And so he told me a story about a mutual patient who had arrested on the operating table. He had given her some antibiotic, which she evidently had a reaction to, flatlined. No heartbeat, no pulse, no respirations, eyes closed, dead, basically. And they started CPR. And when they do CPR in the operating room, what they do is they call, everyone rushes in from the operating rooms nearby, and this one tech with strikingly red hair underneath his surgical cap started to do CPR, chest compressions. And he was doing chest compressions. Now, Dr. Mokel, who's in charge of the code because he's the surgeon, attending surgeon, didn't feel a pulse. So he said to the guy, you're not doing them, you know, adequately enough. Step aside, let me do it. Well, the guy didn't step aside. He asked him again, you know, let me do the CPR. And the guy didn't step aside. So, you know, codes are life and death situations. You're not polite in some of those situations. So he just pushed the guy away, jumped over, started doing CPR compressions, which were adequate, perfused her brain, perfused her whole body, and then after some IV medication, she woke up, but not to consciousness. She was still unconscious until the next day. So she finally lived. It was determined that it was a reaction to the antibiotic that she was given. But the interesting thing is when she was about ready to go home from the hospital a week later, Dr. Mokel walked in and gave her final instructions for the problem that she had with her ankle, which was the original problem. And she said, thanks for saving my life. And Dr. Mokel said, oh, it was a team effort. You know, we all pitch in. And she said, no, I saw you. Thank you for saving my life. I saw you jump in and push that guy with the red hair over, and he stumbled away. And I saw you page Dr. Kolbaba, but he didn't come because he wasn't in the hospital. And I saw you look at the door multiple times. And he said, well, how did you do that? By this point, he's got weak knees and had to sit down. And she said, when I arrested, I rose up to the top of the operating room, and I could see everything that happened. In addition, my grandmother, who had died long ago, came to me and said it wasn't my time, that I needed to go back, and that there would be a place for me, a special place for me in heaven, if I was good. And so about that point, Dr. Mokel took over, and she went back. And Dr. Mokel, by this time, you know, who's a very scientific person, was trying to explain it scientifically and really couldn't. And so she went on after that to be the nicest person in the world. Lived a few more years. She had multiple medical problems. And I couldn't believe how kind and gentle she was after that episode. Now, when Dr. Mokel told me that, I thought, I've got to start writing these things down, because there's something really going on here that I need to know about. And that's when I started asking doctors if they had any stories. And I was amazed at the number of stories that doctors had. Some great, some moderate, some okay. And the ones that I used for the book were ones that either gave me goosebumps or made me cry. Not that they were sad, they just were so emotionally moving. And those are the ones I put in the book.
You know, there was one story in there, and it had to do with the fishing story. And I thought, wow, that is really, really cool. And still, I think people need to realize that people can hear them while they're in a coma. Could you tell us that story? I think
sure.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Sure. One of my one of the doctors in the hospital had a massive stroke, and he was in a deep coma. No one expected him to live, and he was in the ICU. And one of my other doctor friends decided he was a good friend, and he was a fishing buddy of his. And so he came in every day and didn't know what to do. He knew that he was going to be taken off life support in a couple days, so he knew he was on his last legs. And he wanted to do something. So this is John Messett is his name. So he decided to tell this doctor who was in a coma some stories. And they love fishing. They love to go fishing. And they told fishing stories to each other almost every morning when they met in the doctor's lounge. So Dr. Messett started to tell him a fishing story about the fishing adventure that they had in Canada, where they caught a lot of what are called graylings. And they're a little bit like trout. And it was a fascinating story. And every day he'd tell him a story like this, and he made sure no one else was in the room when he told these stories because he didn't want to, you know, people to think he was crazy. And his wife thought he was crazy for telling stories like this to a person who was essentially dead. But after about 3 days, he went back to see them in the ICU, and the bed was dark. The room was dark. The bed was empty, and he was sad that he realized that his friend had died over the night. So he asked the nurse, when did Bob die? And she kind of laughed, and he said, you know, he's a little offended by that. And she said, well, he didn't die. He woke up yesterday and went downstairs to the step down unit. So ultimately, when Dr. Messett caught up with him, he said, in a halting voice because he had a stroke and he couldn't speak as clearly as he would like to. He said, thank you for telling me those stories. I love the one about the graylings, catching the graylings in Canada. That was your best story in that halting way. And John said, well, you mean you could hear me? And he said, absolutely. You were the only person that talked with me. I could hear you clearly. Mm-hmm. You know, John wondered. He was so close to death. You wonder if when a person's that close, you've heard about people, you know, seeing a light that they could go to, and, right. and they realize that, you know, if they cross that line or if they cross the river or cross whatever, they would be gone. And you wonder if he was at that point where he had to make a decision whether to stay or go, and if those stories really were instrumental in helping him stay. And I think they were. And I think he came back because of those stories, and he heard them very clearly. So there is something.
There is something. What, as a medical doctor, and you came up with all these stories, you met with all these doctors.
Yes.
How has it changed your life?
Well, you know, when you hear these stories about really divine intervention and unusual coincidences that really are not coincidental, you know, it gives you some hope. It gives you that, you know, there's hope. I think there's hope. And I think for people that are struggling with all kinds of various maladies or conditions or psychological problems or medical problems, they need to know that there's something out there. And the doctors call this something God. You can call it a force. You can call it a creator, whatever you like. But there's something out there that has your back, that loves you unconditionally, that supports you and will look out for you. And that helps you when you are doing a worthwhile cause. That force, that God, will intervene. And always, if you're doing something worthwhile, will always help you in your efforts. Through a little coincidence, through all kinds of ways that you won't recognize unless you look for it.
So do you now believe that in the possibility of life after death?
Absolutely, absolutely. There are some amazing stories of people coming back and participating in the lives of those that they love. And I think, you know, love, you know, when you write a book like this, you never know what the bottom line is. You never know what the underlying premise is going to be completely. And because these are just a whole series of random stories. And I think one of the premises is that love is an incredible force in the universe. And I think when people love each other, they will sometimes, and there's some stories about this in the book, come back in various ways and help those that are on this earth. And it was amazing to hear those stories.
Wow. You know, coming from a medical doctor, this warms my, it warms my heart to hear this from a medical doctor, because like you said, they are so pressured not to say anything.
Yes.
But it's really uplifting to everyone to hear it from the horse's mouth, shall we say, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
It's just like, it's reaffirming that, wait a minute, this isn't something weird. This is something that's is very real.
It's very real. It happens routinely. As a matter of fact, there are a couple doctors that I've talked to that actually count on miracles and divine intervention in their practice. My partner, for example, John Bourne, does a lot of preoperative clearing for patients going to orthopedic surgeries. And he always says, and he had one circumstance where he cleared a person for surgery and then just thought about it. You know, there was something in the back of his head that kept recurring. You've got to, this guy needs a stress test. This guy needs a stress test. And he, you know, by this point, he recognizes that little voice and doesn't ignore it. And so he did a stress test on the fellow, and sure enough, he had a very abnormal stress test. He went on to have bypass surgery. Had he gone to orthopedic surgery, he might have died on the table. So there are doctors that not only recognize this, but use this as part of their practice. And it's and again, they don't talk about it very much because, you know, it's still a little bit strange to have an ordinary doctor say that I pay attention to miracles, I believe in miracles, I believe in coincidences that are more than coincidental. So,
yeah, you know, I tend to think that there's a lot of people who enter into the medical schools that are really sensitive or medical intuitives.
Yes.
And I think that's happening more and more.
I think it is. And I think I call this group of doctors sappy do-gooders because because, you know, virtually all of them want to do some good in the world every day. They want to cure people. They want to help someone out when they're in trouble. And I think those people tend to be a little more sensitive to things that are beyond this world.
Mm. You know, this is so wonderful to talk to you because, you know, we've been talking about pharmaceuticals. We've been talking, you know, about cholesterol. We were talking about the myths and everything. Mm-hmm. And to talk to you, it shows that, yeah, you know, doctors are really not in it for the money. They're not in it for the pharmaceuticals. They're in it because they want to help people.
You know, that really is true. I learned a lot about talking to doctors because doctors don't talk to each other about these kind of in-depth discussions. And only when I got their stories and it brought out some, you know, heartfelt emotions were they able to speak, you know, from their hearts. And there, my editor called these doctors the noble doctors. And I don't think it's just a selected group. I think that lots of doctors are like this. Let me give you an example. Andy Rao is a cardiologist. And I was having a conversation with Andy on the floor one day, and I said, you know, we were doing some adoption work. I said, gee, Andy, there's this little girl in Romania who lives in one of the state orphanages who was wearing plastic shoes and got too close to the space heater when she was cold at night, and the shoes melted on her feet, and now she has deformed feet and can't walk and probably will never be able to be adopted. And about a week later, that was just a quick conversation, just, you know, how's the weather and everything like that. And a week later, Andy calls me up and says, we'd like to take her. And I said, well, what do you mean? We'd like to adopt her. And I said, well, Andy, you don't know anything about her. You know, you don't know what diseases she has. You don't know what condition she is. You know, and she's never going to be able to walk unless she has multiple operations. And he said, no, it doesn't matter. We know how to take care of her. She's a girl in trouble. We'd like to help her out. We have the means to provide operations for her. We can get her walking. If anyone can help her, we can. And that just touched my heart. And that's not unusual. You know, many doctors would have done that same thing. I was just, you know, it brings me to tears even to think about it right now.
How wonderful. Now, you had mentioned that one of the doctors, when in training, had a fluttering light, either in a dream or during a day when someone on their service was going to die.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Noemi Sigalov is a general surgeon. She was in a general surgical residency, the only girl actually in the residency, and they called her the girl, interestingly. But every time that there someone was going to die, she'd get this fluttering light, and she thought it was really strange. And people around her, and when she'd go into the make rounds in the morning, she'd say to her colleagues that were, you know, at the morning meeting, she'd say, "I had that fluttering light again." They said, "Oh no, who's going to die?" And invariably, someone would. And she had that enough times that the staff dreaded her coming in with that story, because and it would happen any time. It would happen when she was taking a shower in the morning. It would happen when she got up. It would happen, at nighttime when she was going to bed. It would just be a fluttering light off to the side of her vision, and then she would know that someone was going to die. And, you know, the service that she was on was a pretty intense, it was in medical center, pretty intensive service. People were being shot all the time. They were taking care of some really, really serious problems. So people would die on a regular basis, and she could predict it. And it was just amazing.
Wow. Wow. That is so neat.
It is.
What a great story.
It is.
Oh, my goodness. So now we've talked about love and universal energy, and we've talked about how it's helped you or brought you more into the spiritual level. But did it actually have that effect on the other doctors as well who provided stories?
Yeah, I think they recognized that love was an unbelievable force. Let me give you a couple examples. There was Dr. Heitzler is a obstetrician gynecologist, and his wife was delivering their fifth child. And the delivery went fine, but there were some problems that happened after the delivery. She was having some pain and needed some anesthetic. So in those days, they gave a drug called Trilene, which is administered by a mask, and it puts a person totally asleep, unconscious. And so they were about ready to administer the Trilene to Joan, his wife, when Joan's grandmother, who was a midwife, walked into the room, and she was dressed in the usual sweater vest and a white polka dot dress, old lady shoes, and her hair up in the bun. And she stood at the foot of the bed and shook her head, "No, don't do this." And so Joan pushed the Trilene away, the Trilene mask. And it's interesting, Joan and her grandmother, Grandma Hanlon, had a phenomenal relationship. Grandma Hanlon lived with Joan's mother for a long time, and Joan would say, "If ever I got in trouble with my mom, if I made it to my Grandma O'Hanlon's lap, I would be safe." And so they had a phenomenal relationship. They loved each other tremendously. So Joan pushed the Trilene mask away. No one realized that Joan had eaten a large meal a few minutes before the delivery. And so what happened is within about a minute of pushing that mask away, Joan vomited the entire meal. Had she had the mask on and been unconscious, she might have died from aspiration.
Oh, wow.
So Joan, said that she finally made it back to Grandma Hanlon's lap again and had overcome time and space with their love, because Grandma Hanlon had died 22 years before.
Oh, wow. Wow.
That one gave you goosebumps.
Yeah. Oh, my. Gosh.
Love conquers all. It's an amazing force. And I think that's one of the take-home lessons from this book, that, you know, again, you don't realize what significant take-home lessons there are. But that's one, that God loves us, that there's a force out there that loves us and has our back, that love between individuals and family members is the strongest force in the world, in the universe.
And it never dies.
It goes
into another parallel universe. Now, did other doctors experience visions of someone that has passed?
Yes. Let me just think of a good one. Dr. Sigalov, who seemed to be pretty close to the other side much of the time. I was a general surgeon. She operated on a number of people, and one of the people she operated on was a missionary from Africa. They were doctors, doctor missionaries, and every time they would be in the office, they would encourage her to read the scriptures, to get closer to God, and the fellow who was a doctor said to her, you know, someday, someday I'll show you that there is life beyond this life. You'll know. And she thought that was nice, and you know, went on her way. And then one morning she was making rounds really early in the morning because she was flying off to Tucson that day. And as she entered the hospital, she had a vision of this individual, this missionary, this male missionary. And she stopped in her tracks and just said hello. And it was so surprising that she said hello that she realized what had happened and looked around to see if anyone had seen her. And no one had seen her. It was too early in the morning, like 5 o'clock in the morning. And then the vision was gone. She went, made her rounds, went on to Tucson, shut off her pager, everything, because, you know, it's nice to be away from everything when you're on vacation. And the way back in the airport, she turned back her pager on. She turned all the electronics back on and read her emails. And one of the emails said, we're sorry to report that Dr. Johnson, who was the fellow that had appeared to her, had died the day that she saw him appear. She realized that this was the crowning missionary moment of his life, and it turned her life around spiritually also.
Wow. Amazing.
Some amazing stories. I
love them. Oh, wow. It's like I said, it's beyond uplifting. It's like, okay, it's really giving you hope that it's not everything that you're seeing in this day-to-day world. There's something way beyond it.
Yeah.
And you are bringing it to us, and I so appreciate it. Now, you had a near accident in Iowa.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
We were in the Amana colonies and to sightseeing, I think. I can't remember exactly what the purpose was, but I think we were just having fun. And we were driving down this country road pretty fast. We were probably going 60, and there was a car behind us that was going like crazy. They passed us up, and off in the distance, I could see a farmer with his hay rack going and his tractor going across the road, perpendicular to where we were, and was starting to cross the road. And I thought, oh no, this person's going to smash into the farmer. And so we put on our brakes. They put on our brakes, and we were about 2 inches away from that person. And there was an embankment that went down just off to the road. There was no shoulder in the road. The embankment went down about 20 feet. It was very steep. So all of a sudden, when that happened, when I saw the farmer, things started to move in slow motion. It was really strange. And I could keep our car about 2 inches from the car that was passing us and about 2 or 3 feet from the embankment. And I could maneuver the car, and it was so easy to steer and to know what to do, because everything was moving in such slow motion that I couldn't believe it. Ultimately, when we got to the farmer, we weren't able to slow down enough. The person next to me hit the farmer, and we were able to go around the tractor without any problem at all, and we were untouched and unhurt. The farmer was hurt badly, the people in the car were hurt badly, but we were totally untouched. And it was a strange experience, and after we got out of it, the slow motion went away, and it was life-saving.
How do you explain that? Because, you know, when I was a little girl, I was at the beach, and I was walking on some rocks, and I fell in slow motion before I hit the bottom.
And maybe that happens to other people. I don't know.
So how is there an explanation for that?
I don't know if there is a scientific explanation for that. I think the only explanation that I could come up with is something that was helping me to not have an accident, and something that obviously was helping you to know how to fall or where to fall. And I think that may happen to others. That's just a little divine intervention, I think, some force is looking out for us. Again, this love, I think, is part of it.
Exactly. It's really something that you brought that up. So, yeah, I wasn't hurt when I fell. I could have been because I was landing on rocks, mm-hmm. but that's really incredible. I appreciate you bringing that up. It just gave me an aha moment. So
these stories
you're right.
Do. These stories do. I've had many patients say, oh, yeah, that was more than a coincidence, I realized. Now, you know, after you tell me these stories, I realize some of the things in my life really were not coincidental at all. And it's fun to hear that comment.
Yes. So when people read this book, they're getting aha moments in their own lives that's awakening them.
Yeah. I had one fellow, one of the patients. Now, you know, I love to tell these stories in my examining rooms. And I'm usually, get behind in my schedule, but it's still worth it. And one of the patients told me about an occurrence that happened to him. He thought it was a total coincidence. And after I told him a couple of stories, he said, no, I don't think that's a coincidence anymore. He was looking for an apartment for his daughter who had an internship in New York City. And it was a three-month internship. And they were not very well off. And so it turned out that she couldn't afford any apartments that were in the center of New York City. They're very expensive. So she was going to have to give up the internship. Well, that night, my patient had a dream. He dreamed about a person that he'd known a long time ago, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, that hadn't been seen, hadn't talked to for that length of time. And it was a strange kind of a dream, but, you know, he dismissed it when he woke up. And the next morning, he got a phone call. And who was it? The person he hadn't talked to for 10 or 15 years. He happened to be living in New York City. And he said, you know, I just wanted to call you. I had a thought that I needed to call you today. I wanted to tell you about my life. I've been very successful. I've made a lot of money. I'm now retired. I live in the middle of New York City. I have a three-bedroom apartment. I'm all alone and very lonely. And the fellow, my patient, said, well, you know, my daughter's looking for an apartment in New York. Do you think you could put her up? Oh, I'd love to. Have her give me a call. She can have a bedroom of her own. I'll feed her. We'll have a grand time. I'll show her around. And sure enough, he did. And it was an amazing experience. And he thought, you know, I thought this was a coincidence, but after listening to you, this is not a coincidence at all. This was something that, this was, again, that force, that God that was looking out for me and my daughter.
So it is true that something out there has got your back, if only you can trust and keep your eyes open.
Exactly. If only you believe and believe in something, that's something out there. Invariably, when you're involved, it's doing something worthwhile. That force, that God, will intervene and help you in your efforts.
You know, a lot of people out there in the world scoff at the law of attraction. But one of the things that I really love about it and the philosophy behind it and the universal power is the fact that it tends to make people open their eyes to see occurrences that they might not have normally noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that respect, it opens up another world to them, as well as what you are saying within this book. It's opening up our 3D dimensional world where we're living into other dimensions where we can just finally see through those cracks that,
yes.
Yeah, there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
There's something beyond this, and it's wonderful. All we have to do is kind of open our eyes.
And that's true. And that's what I was hoping that people would realize, that, you know, there's so many doctors that have these amazing experiences. And when people believe there's something else out there, I think they become kinder people. They become gentler people. They try to help other people out. I think it helps all of us. And I was hoping in this secular world that this book would help people realize that if they believe in something else, it's going to be a better world. There's going to be less conflict, less hate, and I'm very hopeful that when people realize there's a God out there, there's a force out there that's got their back, they'll be better people for it.
This is so wonderful, and it's so timely too, because you know the holidays are really tough with people who have already passed.
Yes.
And there's a lot of loneliness going on.
Yes.
And I think that the timing of this book is so wonderful that if someone really wants to be inspired and know that their loved one is right there with them, they just need to pick up this book, purchase this book, and read it for yourself, because it's going to open your eyes even more.
I had an interesting experience, Jules, before I got into writing the book. And this is one of the other things that got me into writing the book, and that is an experience I had on a vacation. Now, I have 7 children. I'm not sure where they all came from, but I've got 7 children.
Wait a minute. You're a doctor. You don't know where they came from. Okay.
I love them all dearly, and one of the things that I love to do the most in anything I do is go on vacation, because virtually all the kids and their grandkids, my grandkids, tend to come along on those vacations. I remember a very special vacation we had in Cape Cod. That's one of our favorite places to go to, is Cape Cod, Massachusetts. And it was such a perfect evening. You had to pinch yourself because it was such a phenomenal evening. And when we're on vacation, we like to get things that you normally wouldn't eat. So we got swordfish steaks, and we got corn on the cob, and we got bread and potatoes. And when we were checking out, now the boys on vacation like to cook, so the boys were cooking. And when we went to the store, we saw a whole bunch of pies. There's a whole stack of cherry pies, and we bought 4 of them because we have, a ton of people on vacation with us. And we got to talking about the pies we'd liked in the past, and we got to talking about my mother, who made a rhubarb pie, because we had a huge rhubarb plant in the back of our yard. And every fall, she would cut all the stalks off and make this most incredible, very sweet rhubarb pie.
Oh, I love rhubarb pie.
Oh, I do too. And when we would go to visit her with my kids, we'd all sneak into the kitchen with our spoons, and we'd go after the pie, right in the pot, right in the pan. And that was so much fun. And since she's passed, I haven't had any rhubarb pie. And that evening on vacation, it was such a special evening. The kids were, chasing in the yard. The girls were laughing. The boys were cooking and talking and telling jokes. And it was just an incredible evening. And I kept thinking to myself, I wonder if people on the other side still participate in our lives. I wonder if my mother would love to have an evening like this, to see the whole family there, everyone getting along, and just a beautiful sunset. So we ate the dinner. We had my wife served the pie afterwards, the cherry pie, and I put my fork into the pie and put it in my mouth, and I got goosebumps up and down my back, because the pie wasn't cherry. It was rhubarb.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, you can make lots of excuses, and say that maybe, in the factory or the bakery where they package the pies, they put the rhubarb in with the cherry. But I've never seen very many rhubarb pies that you can buy at stores. And so when I, my thinking on this occurrence was that my mother was there. She wanted to tell us that she was there in a subtle way, and she was enjoying the family and the family times.
Oh, how wonderful. This is such a wonderful, wonderful book. Physicians' Untold Stories, Miraculous Experience. Doctors are hesitant to share with their patients or anyone. My hope is that more and more doctors will feel it commonplace to reveal the things that you are telling us. That's my hope, anyway.
I agree. And that's, again, one of the purposes of the book, so that, people will feel more comfortable about sharing their spiritual feelings with their doctors. Because doctors, even though they don't tell about these kinds of stories to most people, know that there is something else out there in most cases, that there are miracles, that there are strange occurrences, and that, sometimes healing takes place without medicine and with faith. And so I'm hoping that doctors will realize that, and many already do.
The whole world is awakening up. Your website is physiciansuntoldstories.com. People can go there and purchase a book, or they can purchase a book on Amazon, Kindle, or Barnes and Nobles, or wherever. Is this electronic, or?
It's electronic in most of the publishers, but as far as Amazon, they can get a soft cover, a copy through Amazon, and also through Kindle, through Amazon too.
Okay. My suggestion to all the listeners out there, if you know someone who is experiencing a very lonely holiday because somebody has passed over, this would be a phenomenal gift that you can give them hope. And just the fact that it's coming from a medical doctor is enough to make you stand up and pay attention. And I think this, it will help the person to heal. So it's a great Christmas gift. And Dr. Kobolba, I can't thank you enough for taking the time and sharing this with us. This is just phenomenal. It's just been an absolute delight to talk to you.
It's been fun, Jules. I love to talk about this book because I think it's got a message that of hope that people need to hear.
Especially now. Yeah. Are you going to be writing another one?
You know, I'd like to write another one about nurses and allied health personnel because they've had as many goosebumpy experiences as the doctors have had. And I've had a number of nurses come up to me and say, you know, I've got this experience. Let me tell you about it. And there are some incredible experiences. So that's the next book. I haven't started it yet, but that will be the next book.
So you just kind of gather them up and then they tell their stories?
Yeah.
Is that how you do it?
Yeah. When I interviewed the doctors, I would hang out in the doctor's lounge in our hospital, which has all kinds of wonderful things that the doctors are attracted to, like donuts and candy and coffee and, you know, the good things that doctors like to eat. And I'd pounce on everyone that came through, and I'd say, you know, I'm writing this book. Do you have a story for me? And sometimes they wouldn't understand what it was, so I told them a story in many cases, and then they would realize what I was talking about. And if they knew a story, they'd know it right away. If they had a story, they knew it, and they could tell me. And then I would, you know, follow up with multiple phone calls later on. But that's pretty much how I did it. And that's what's happened with the nurses, too. I bump into nurses here and there, and they'll come up to me and say, I've got this story for you. I read your book, and I'd like to tell you about my story. And there's some phenomenal stories.
You know, this just seems like it's going to affect the medical profession. If the doctors all become more spiritually oriented and more connected to the people rather than just objects or diseases to cure, then a whole new world's going to open up.
I think it will.
For everybody.
I think it will. I think you're right.
This is phenomenal. Oh, wow. Well, keep up the good work. I'm just delighted. And when you write that other book, please come back on and let's talk about it. And I'm anxious to hear it.
Thanks, Jules. It's been wonderful talking with you.
It's been wonderful talking with you, too. And I want to remind people, Physicians Untold Stories, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Barnes & Nobles, or go to his website,
physiciansuntoldstories.com.
With an S, yeah, I wanted to make sure. And I'll put that on the link also when on my host page so that people can go there to get the link. Fantastic. Thank you again, Dr. Kobolba.
Thanks, Jules.
And there you have it. There is so much more to life than we can physically see, but we're never alone. And this wonderful, massive universe always has our back. We can trust it. We can stop worrying, and we can know that everything is going to turn out just fine. Life is good, and our connection to it is unending forever and evermore. Have a wonderful week, and we will be back next week with even more goodies to talk about on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Thanks again, and have a good one. Talk to you later. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another great show from Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you'd like to comment on tonight's show, send an email to Jules@LOARadionetwork.com and have a great